Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Hey, everybody. This is a special edition of Cool Tools, and Kevin and I are going to be interviewing each other about a couple of tools we've been using and enjoying lately. How's it going, Kevin?
It's great to hear your voice again, Mark.
Yeah.
I know that I always look forward to the things that you find, and you have a really good nose for uncovering cool stuff, and so I think it's good. The fortune has sort of bestowed upon us this chance to just talk to each other.
I agree. I think so. And likewise, Kevin, you always pick stuff that is surprising and interesting. Why don't you start by telling me something that you are using?
So I was looking for, went on into the Google world of and YouTube world, looking for a way to attach something with magnets and have it lift off easily. So I wanted that kind of that really strong force of a magnet attachment, mm-hmm. but I wanted to be able to take it off really easy. And I found out that in fact there was something that was made for that. And it's called a mag switch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very ingenious mechanical device that where you turn a knob and the magnet will be sticking to a metal surface so strongly you can't move it. And then turning it 180 degrees at the knob releases it and it can lift it off easily. So you can buy little mag switches like that to attached to your own jig, but mm-hmm. they also come pre-installed in things like a featherboard. And a featherboard is used in woodworking. It's sort of it looks like it has like a veins, like a feathered side, and it's used to hold wood against a fence while you're cutting it on a table saw. So
okay.
It presses it in. But you can use mag switches for almost anything where you want to be able to have something attached strongly and then be able to instantly release it on a metal surface. And so you can buy little mag switches, which are about the working body is about 3/4 inch deep, and the knob mm-hmm. is another 1/2 inch above that. You can use these and put them into your own jigs or boxes or whatever else that you might need, where you'd want to have this thing very firmly attached. It wouldn't move at all. And then with just a little twist, you can unmagnetize it. So
that's
to speak.
Cool. Is it like a 90-degree turn of a knob?
Yes. 180. No, it's a 90-degree mm-hmm. turn. Right. And it works without electronics. So there's no batteries involved. There's nothing to kind of wear out or go bad. And so these kind of it's work surface kind of instruments you'd use for like making a fence, something mm-hmm. to guide if you're working on a metal surface. Or you can buy them separately and put them into anything where you want to have adjustments very easily. And that's what would be used for. Not something you screw down, you're going to screw it down. But if you want to have something that's constantly needing adjustments and that adjustment has to be very rigid mm-hmm. in place, that's what a mag switch would be used for. And the switches themselves, I think the smallest one is, I'm going to guess $20 or something. I don't think I think there's a kind of still covered in patents and still being made in the U.S., but I suspect they're new enough that there'll be knockoffs and derivations and derivatives made soon enough mm-hmm. to make them cheaper.
I wonder if a search on AliExpress would yield for these to see if.
That's your tool. Mark is big on AliExpress and how, but yeah, that would be a very interesting question, is whether there's knockoff versions of this at this point. I haven't seen any.
The other thing that I would be interested in is just seeing how the mechanism works.
Yeah, I haven't yet opened it up. And oh, actually, the way I got to, I'm sorry, I forgot this. The way I arrived at finding this was that actually somebody, YouTubers, were making their own versions of this, but the scale they had to make it at was like, you know, a foot, like, you know, 20 centimeters large. They actually, it was so complicated that they weren't even trying to miniaturize it because it was complicated enough that they made it a very large size. It was basically unusable. It was just a demonstration of how it actually worked. Mm-hmm. Because the thing about it is the surface of the surface of the device doesn't change. It's not like it's, I mean, it is lifting it up in some ways or something, but it's not actually physically moving. You can't see any movement at all. So there are people who have been trying to reverse engineer what actually is going on and have opened them up and try to replicate and make their own version of that. It wasn't really worth the. They hadn't miniaturized it enough.
Yeah, sure. That's cool. I'm just looking at it, and I think you're right. It is like a kind of a proprietary thing that's looks like it's patent protected right now. So
right.
As soon as that expires, I'm sure you'll see a flourishing of them. I couldn't find anything on AliExpress.
Yeah.
About them yet. That's cool. So you need a metal surface, typically like a, you know, saws and drill presses and all that, they have that kind of steel surface that these things
right onto. But also I have seen it one other place, and that is in use of like cabinets, where if you know how sometimes you use like a magnetic latch, mm-hmm. and the way that magnetic latches today work is that if you give it a good enough tug, it would break that magnetic seal. Mm-hmm. But these are strong enough that, and you can use strong enough magnets that you could have it so even with a firm pull, you still can't pull it apart. And so you have this knob, you have a magnet switch that actually opens it up. And so you change it from you it becomes like a latch that you turn, but it's actually being latched with magnets.
Ah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It's again, it's mechanical, but instead of having a latch that is moving and holding it by moving some metal into a slot, you just have this rearranging of the magnets, which can release or unrelease or lock the door, cabinet door or door. So that's one of the places I've seen people kind of experimenting with ways to use a mag switch.
Mm-hmm. That's sounds cool. And if we can find a video that shows how these work, I'll
yeah,
add a link to that.
Right.
I think some people I'm seeing are calling them on-off magnets, which sounds about right.
It's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
So these are kind of new, and I think they're going to find their way into many things, and they'll probably continue to be made smaller as people figure out, you know, how to optimize their space. But on-off magnets would be a great term.
Yeah, really cool. All right, so the one I have, since you watch tons of YouTube videos, I'm sure you've seen the nonstop ads for these that are just like too many for masterclass series.
Yes.
Nonstop. Well, we finally broke down and got it because they have a deal where it's $180 for a year and you get two accounts. So I emailed my sister and I said, would you like to do this with me? And she said, sure. So it was $90. So we have a year access, and these are actually really great video series. They're instructional and they have like
I don't know how they get these people, because they're all like super wealthy, you know, it's like Gordon Ramsay teaching cooking, and they're not just phoning it in either. Like, we watch Gordon Ramsay's cooking thing, and he does it from his house, and he shows how he makes scrambled eggs, how he bones a chicken, how he cooks chicken breasts, how he fillets a fish, and he's like really into it. He is passionate about it, is you know, really like serious about teaching you how to cook. And Carla and I watched the whole thing. We're like, this is great. Then we watched Dan Brown, the guy who writes all those thrillers like mm-hmm. Da Vinci Code and stuff. He talked about how to write a thriller and how he does it. And it is so good. It's amazing. And he really cares about it. He's, again, you know, these people are like people at the top of their game, and they're really serious about making you learn from them, like what they have learned. And also, not only do you get like between 2.5 hours to 3 hours of instruction from each of these people, there's typically a 40 to 80 page PDF workbook that comes with videos, and you can download those. And that has a lot of supplemental information and extra stuff that's not in the videos. And so I think at this point, there are close to 100 of these classes, and you can watch as many as you want. So there's David Lynch on creativity, Anna Wintour on leadership. We watched Margaret Atwood on writing. Carla watched one about makeup. It's like, I think that if you can find a friend to split the price with, you're going to be really happy with it. The next one we want to watch is your friend Will Wright on creativity and gaming, which I think would be a blast.
And you say it was $90 for how long?
A year.
For a year. So you have a whole year to consume these.
Yeah. And so we've been watching them as much as possible, because we have not really come across one that we don't like yet.
Right,
and
right.
And then
right.
There's one on... this one I'm really looking forward to is Steve Martin on how to be funny. And so he starts out with people who like want to be funny, but aren't funny. And they sit with him, and they're like kind of your proxy as a student.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So Kevin, I think you would love these.
Yeah, no, I absolutely would. And I have been thinking very seriously about getting a subscription. Your idea of sharing one with someone else is a great way to spread the cost. So, I mean, $90, if you get one up paying $90 for a year, and you know, you watched all of them over a year, that's $1 a piece. That's certainly worth it.
Yeah. Dollar a class for like a 3 hour class and a, you know, 60 page workbook for each one too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. And I think, you know, they keep adding them more and more. So we'll probably resubscribe. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly worth to try it for a year. You know, you can watch a lot in a year. So, I think we will give it a shot just for the first year.
Yeah. Like Martin Scorsese is one. I mean, it's all the people, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Jodie Foster, Ron Howard, is like everyone. And they really did a great job of like having these people put a lot of thought into it. They're not just like, you know, coming there and answering questions or anything. Right. They really plan something. They're great teachers, all of them.
Great. Okay. That's a good suggestion.
Yeah. All right. So what's your next one, Kevin?
So my next one is something that is kind of another newish tool. And that is a version of a pen. I think it's called a Pika pen. Mine is called a long-nosed pattern marker. And what it is a marker, like a Sharpie marker, that's at the end of a very long, narrow metal tube, like the size of like what used to be inside like a ballpoint pen. So it's like that inner ballpoint pen tube with a marker at the end on a fat stylus. And the whole point of it is for marking in woodworking and metalworking and making things. Like if you had to imagine marking inside a hole, the inside of a hole, or it's to reach in to very, very tight places to mark. But once you have that, you just use it for everything because it's it's really good at marking on a parallel, like on an edge.
Right.
Or down a groove or anything. So is made as a long nose pattern marker for these tight spots, but you wind up using it for everything because it's like a long needle nosed pliers can reach in. This is a needle nosed marker.
Mm-hmm.
And
it almost looks like a syringe or something.
Yeah, that's a very good description. It's like a syringe, and at the end of the syringe is the marker. And it's good for making marks on tight places of any sort. And again, once you have one around and carry it in your pocket, the version I have on the other end is just a broad felt tip marker on the other end. So it does dual purpose.
Cool. And I think there were $7 or $8 around.
Right.
There.
So these are kind of an imitation of a pen called, I think it's a Pika pen, is yellow, and they're very expensive. These I find a little bit more versatile, much cheaper. They seem to do as good of a job. And they're dual ended.
And what's the brand that
you're using? It's called Fast Cap.
Fast Cap. Okay.
Long nose marker, Fast Cap.
Yeah, I see that. It's $7.85.
Yeah.
And I'm looking like at a Pika one, and it's like $21 or $19.
Yeah,
yeah. It's a big difference.
Right. I don't know enough about how long the comparative longevity of either of either of them. I have both, and neither one has sort of expired, so I don't know. But it's so far, the cheaper $7 one is been fine for me.
That's cool. And so you use it just for everything in the shop?
For marking, yeah. For measuring, marking, that kind of stuff. It's like a fine point, but an extended long syringe fine point, a long-nosed fine point marker.
Okay. That's good. That's a good one. Okay, cool. The next one that I have, or my final pick, is the Wi-Fi in my house has been a problem like for the last 10 years. And I think the house when it was constructed has like chicken wire in the walls or something, which
for the stucco and the lath.
Yeah, exactly. So every room is a Faraday cage, and there's just no radio signals are going to penetrate. So we had like hotspots in every room with different SSID. So every time you'd go to a different room, you'd have to like change your phone or laptop settings.
Wow.
And it was a huge hassle. Everybody's complaining all the time in the family, TV, so many devices trouble. So I ended up just like doing research on mesh Wi-Fi systems. And I picked the Nest Wi-Fi that's manufactured by Google and bought a router and these Wi-Fi points. And, I think I bought like one router and three Wi-Fi points. It was about $500 for the whole setup. And now our house is just like covered in great Wi-Fi with just one SSID. And it's so nice. We never have to touch those Wi-Fi settings on our devices anymore. And the crazy thing, it was so amazing. Like I set this up and gave it a new SSID and just the number of things around my house that need wireless internet is like astounding. It's like crazy, like sprinkler systems and garage door openers and all of our streaming TV devices. It was like endless. I was like, oh my God, there's another thing that I have to change, these.
And it was all kind of barely working before. Right. And now it's,
just the convenience and also much, much faster than before too. I don't know why it is, but something about the technology, so it just screams. So if you're having the same problem as me and you have like this hodgepodge of wireless device, I had all sorts of things like doing, you know, like sending Ethernet over the power, the, you know, the right. AC wiring and everything.
Did you have like relays or what do they call them, amplifiers?
Yeah,
or?
I tried that, but I was having problems with it. And yeah, I was like stringing Ethernet cable under the house and stuff. And it's just like, I'm looking at this little pile of crap that I'm going to donate.
Right. And so the Nest worked.
Yeah, the Nest worked.
Totally. Do you have Nest smoke alarms already too?
You know, we don't. We're using the Ring system for all of that. So that's kind of dumb. We have like...
Okay, because our houses, we have them through the house upstairs in my office and downstairs and stuff. And the beauty of that is that it does form a mesh.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a mesh. It's mostly smoke and carbon monoxide, but also the advantage of the mesh is that if there's something happens, like say downstairs, which is so far away, there could be a bomb go off and I wouldn't know it back here, but I'll hear about it on the Nest chain. It forwards it, you know, it says, it announces that there's a problem down in 149A, and vice versa. If we're up front and there's something happens in the office, it relays that message to all the Nests throughout the house.
That's great.
Yeah. And it also has a built-in nightlight. So it's motion sensitive. So at night, I found out that that's like one of the most useful things on a daily basis going through the house, is that it's lighting my way through the dark house as I'm walking along, because it's detecting me in my path. And it's just a momentary lighting up of where I am as I go along. So that's really so cool. Really cool.
How many do you have? How many?
We must have 1, 2, 3, 4. We probably have 7.
Oh, wow. A lot.
We have a very rambling house. I have one down in my workshop. Our whole thing is all on one floor. And so it's just kind of, it's like a big ranch thing. It just meanders. Yeah. So I could see the Nest actually incorporating in, or that working in with that it works for us. So I could, and it works with our thermostat too. That's the other thing I forgot to mention.
Oh yeah. We have a Nest thermostat also.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's good. So it looks like the Nest Protect is what they're called. They detect smoke and carbon monoxide, which is great. And they're about a little more than $100 each.
Right. And so, and they're all, again, linked together. Most of our are the wired type, because when we did remodels, we wire them into the power so they don't have to have batteries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they may have battery backup, but they don't seem to go out very often. They're mostly running off of the house power.
Okay.
So they're somehow integrated to the Nest thermostat as well.
That's really cool. That's good. Okay, I'm going to get some of these actually.
The way that they do, I'm not sure about this, whether the Nest thermostat actually takes some of the motion sensing that the Protects are using. That would be a good question to know.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know that the Nest itself has a motion sensing, and they can detect whether or not you're in the house and whether it should be warmed up before you come or cooled down or whatever. They try to anticipate your usage based on what you've used before.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that they are actually using some of the motion sensing in the protectors. I don't know. They should if they're not.
Yeah. Okay.
I have one more tool.
Okay.
So for an even 5.
Okay.
This is another kind of, it's not a major thing. It's a minor thing that just is sort of so handy that it changes from not wanting to use a thing to using it. And that is, typical workshop tool is a propane torch. So it's a little torch that you put on the end of a canister of propane that you use for soldering, heating things, plumbing, or trying to light something to get it started. And the normal way you would have to light these is you'd have a little flint thing or a match, and it was very precarious and somewhat kind of dangerous trying to light it. But there's a little device, a burn-zomatic device, which is like a piezoelectric thing that is built into the torch. So it's a torch that has this built-in starter. It's a one-button thing. You just press the button, and it opens the gas valve and ignites with a spark the flame instantly, without fail. And so now when I grab the container, it's like an instant light. It's there. I don't have to fool with it. I'm not going to blow my hand off doing it. And it just makes it me much more inclined to grab it, to even like, instead of having a match, you can just use this, and it's a very hot flame. It's not going to blow out. So it's sort of, it's been far more useful and handy than I imagined. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's not a big step, but it turns out to the ease and the form factor and the utility of it is so much faster that you actually use it more often. And that's a sign of a good tool for me.
Yeah. As opposed to, remember those little, like a little metal cup with a piece of flint.
Yeah. Flint thing. Yeah. Which kind of works. You can, by the fifth time you try it, it will work. But this is, yeah. And people, so you use, like, if you want to start your charcoal fire, if you want a barbecue fire, whatever, you grab this and use it and you light it, and it's instead of matches or anything, or even those other little long Bic pans with a long stem, and I don't know what they're called, those lighters. Mm-hmm. I guess they're called a lighter. Even those I find difficult. They don't always work. It takes two or three tries to get the thing to ignite. This thing is like without fail. It's going to, and it's hot.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's so useful. And so what do you use your blowtorch for?
I've used it for heating things, instead of like a heat gun, or, you know, just to warm something up. I use it for soldering plumbing. I use it for soldering wires, fat wires, like for for soldering. I use it for I was trying to burn something off, or it was like rope. Like if you're making something with rope and you cut some rope, you have to
plastic rope.
Yeah, plastic rope, even nylon rope. You have to kind of singe the end.
Yeah.
So it doesn't fray.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be like how I'd use this. You know.
Have you used it to like brown food?
I have another little micro version of this tiny little thing.
Mm-hmm.
That you can use. This is a little too unwieldy to have in the kitchen. I mean, it's just in terms of where you're going to store it.
Yeah.
There is a little micro version that takes a little butane canister, and that's perfect for browning food.
Yeah.
This one is a little too cumbersome to find its place in the kitchen.
Sure, that can's pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's another cool tool for me. I hope it was useful to folks out there. And we'll have a guest on our next episode of Cool Tools.
Yeah. Thanks, Kevin. It's always great hearing about your picks.
Yeah. It's fun. We should do this more often on a regular basis.
I like it. Yeah, for sure. Hey, everybody, it's your co-host, Mark, and I wanted to let you know that we have a lot more going on here in Cool Tools than just this podcast. We have our flagship website where we review a new tool every day. That's at cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters. We have this podcast. We have a YouTube channel where we review tools. And if you like what you hear and see and read, the best way to help us out is by going to our Patreon page at patreon.com/cooltools. and donate at any level you wish. You can even contribute $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that you give us will go towards paying for our transcribing costs, editing videos, and editing the podcast. It goes towards paying contributors who write the reviews for us. It goes towards our equipment costs, our hosting costs, and it supports our very small company of three people. This week, I wanted to give a shout out to some of our Patreon supporters who have been giving us at least $2 a month. And if you give us $2 a month, we'll give you a shout out online. And this week, I would like to thank Michael Sacochia, Molly Starr, M. Velderman, Opposable Thumbs, Pamela Cooley, Patrick Weyer, Paul Hosey, Randy Fisher, Stuart Burroughs Brand, Synaptic Sam, Therese Schwartz, Tom Hawkins, Tom Markham, What Bear, Javier Pangolin, David Lang, Eric Byers, Sean Hartley, Stephen Powell, Greg Lichtscheid, John Hobson, Adam Bristol, Adam Naher, Anonymous, Bill Kempthorne, Bruce I. Niles, Chris Woodruff, C. Kolos, Daryl Flynn, Egg Fleegoff, Eric Hanschrau, Eric Hoover, Godfrey Saldana, Jay Skiles, John M. Larson, Jude Galligan, Kenneth Gilman, and Lucas Frank. Thank you very much for supporting the show, and we will see you next week.